The following program, Living Out Loud, is sponsored by Morton Group, LLC, and to the extent applicable, their guests. The views and opinions expressed therein do not necessarily reflect those of NewsWeb Radio Company or its management.
Hello, hello, and happy Sunday, everyone. Welcome to Living Out Loud. I'm Mary Morton, and I'm excited to welcome my co-host for this week, Derek Clifton. Hello, Derek.
Hi, Mary. How are you doing?
I am great. Great to have you here. Derek and I, we go back a few years. I think we can say that, right?
Yes, indeed.
So Derek, in case those of you who may not know, is an extraordinary journalist and a media relations professional. And we met several years ago on the University of Chicago's campus.
Yes.
What was it for?
It was an event with Point Foundation. Is the nation's largest LGBTQ plus student scholarship program. And I think you were speaking.
I was doing, yes, a little speaking, and I hung around, and we had
a chance to talk, and the rest is history.
The rest is history, as they say. That's right. And so tell folks a little bit about what you do, because you are an extraordinary journalist, and we're going to be actually talking about one of the stories that you wrote a few months ago, and that story involves someone else who's a special guest. But let's start with, what you've been doing.
So I've been focusing a lot, and most of my career I've focused on the intersection of identity, culture, and social issues. Mm-hmm. It's what I went to Northwestern to study, both for undergrad and for grad school, figuring out how to take issues of oppression and make that easily digestible for folks who are trying to make sense of it, including myself. But also because I always had this idea that when we can get certain issues into the public sphere and talk about them in a really constructive way, we can really build bridges across lines of difference. So from there, going to college, being on a campus where at the time my graduating class, there was only 4% African-American.
Really?
Folks.
And about how large was that class at Northwestern?
So the campus for undergrad, maybe 8,000 or so. Uh-huh. And then for my own class, about 2,000 or so. So 4%.
Wow.
So matriculating freshmen, I think the number was like 81. And it was abysmal, but somehow made it out.
You did.
And
absolutely.
Got out into the world, started, my career writing columns for the Daily Northwestern and editing that opinion section of the college newspaper. And it was a really formative experience for me, making sense of both what was happening on campus, what was happening here locally, and also nationally in terms of a lot of various entertainment, culture, politics, you name it. I wanted to find a way to make sense of that from a standpoint of identity.
And you've written for a really vast, if you will, a variety of publications and outlets. I mean, I was so excited when it was a couple of years ago, I think, because we were in COVID when the DEI ban was put into place by the former president,
yes.
Right? And you did a story and interviewed me for it, which was wonderful.
Yes, and it was, and I think that was for NBC News.
It was.
For NBC Black.
It was.
Mm-hmm. And there was a lot of attempts to rewrite history or obscure history, the 1776 right. Project being one of them. And this large response to folks trying to correct the record or figure out ways to promote inclusion, diversity, and equity. And it was alarming. And that project, even though when the new administration came in, they pushed that project aside. But of course, now we have other threats on the horizon to DEI and, things that are in the works in various states, laws passing to suppress talk about the issues that really matter to people on a fundamental level when they're trying to articulate the reasons why certain laws and social practices keep them held back. And I know when we talked, you were talking about the work that you do, you know, on a daily basis and how you use your superpowers to create some good in the world. And we, I think we also brought in an African-American politics professor to make sense of that as well. So that's the kind of writing I most enjoy doing, even though sometimes it makes me want to pull my hair out.
No, it's I can only imagine. And how did you develop this interest in journalism? Because we both were talking earlier, we both grew up on the South Side.
Yes.
And, you know, I went to Loyola. I stayed here for college as well. How did you get into the sort of journalistic area?
It was by accident.
Oh, really?
You know, I at first maybe thought I was going to go the law school route.
You know, I thought about that as well.
Really?
Yeah, I really thought I was going to go to law school for quite some time. Yeah.
Yeah. And
why did you change your mind?
I talked to some corporate lawyers and figured out I didn't want that life for myself.
Yeah.
But when I spoke to them about what they were doing, there was one in particular that did some intellectual property law work around marketing. And I was like, I don't care as much about the legal talk as much as that was a cool campaign that defendant worked on. Well, what did they do? And then I was like, you know what? I think I need to study that.
Mm-hmm.
I need to study communication, how words mean and matter to people, and ideas. So that's how I ended up exploring, you know, in undergrad, you know, writing for the college newspaper and then reporting and blogging. I think the first of many freelance journalism stops for me was Windy City Times. And, you know, it was a very formative experience to write about different cultural events, exploring, you know, different political issues, but then being able to go from that experience to working in New York City.
Yes, that's right. You left for a while.
Yeah, I did. Mm-hmm. And you know, I always say New York's a great place to visit, not the best place to live. The rent's too high.
It's hard. It's incredibly exciting. This is where, you know, my spouse came from immediately, before she came to Chicago. And I love New York and was always excited to go to New York. I always want to cram in as many shows as I can. But it is a hard city to live in.
Very. And especially if you are a emerging journalist with student loan debt.
Oh, my God. And if you, yes, you feel that way. And I'm saying if you're, an adult, been working for many years.
Yes.
It is still very expensive. Exciting, but super expensive.
Super expensive. You know, but it was a very formative experience for me. And I've taken that with me for the almost entirety of my career so far. It's been, 10 years since I started in New York, should say.
And how long were you in New York?
A couple of years, maybe about 2 years.
Okay, and where did you hang when in New York? Where'd you live?
Lived in Astoria, so Queens, and I loved the elevated trains because they reminded me of Chicago.
Yeah.
And also in Brooklyn.
Okay, all right.
But was in Manhattan all day, every day for work, and sometimes having to blitz from getting up at like 4 a.m. to start my writing on my beat, and then all of a sudden, MSNBC has a segment. Sometimes it's quickly go to some station's headquarters to film a spot or something or another. So it was always, very, very fast paced.
Right.
Very different.
No 2 days. I mean, it's similar in a very different way than sort of what we do at Morton Group, in that no 2 days are alike. You know, everything is very different. And I like some of that, but we're going to continue to talk to Derek and find out a little bit more about his career. And we're going to be talking about an article that he wrote not too long ago that was really inspired by, I think, the extraordinary jazz singer Lucy Smith, who's toured this past summer with an incredible show that she's going to talk about that. And we want to talk that show up because we really want it to be produced and shown in many, many places, right? So we're going to talk about all that. And, I'm going to just say before we go to break that this is my next to last show. It's hard for me to believe. this experiment, this social experiment, is coming to an end, but I've enjoyed it so much. And I have a ton of people to thank, and I'm going to thank you this week and next week. But, you know, what's exciting is that Alan Breslin, who is on after me now, Around the Town Chicago, that will move into this slot at 1 p.m. starting on April 7th. So I want to give a shout out to Alan, who is... I don't know if he has a battery pack attached to him or what, but he has more energy than lots of folks put together. And you can catch like all the current theater productions that are out, great restaurants, all on his show. So check out Around the Town Chicago. And I'm going to be making my, as I said, I'm going to continue making my thank yous throughout the show this week and next week, but have really enjoyed this time here. And I'm so happy that you are on before I wrap.
I'm happy to be here.
All right, everyone, you're listening to Living Out Loud, and we are back in a moment.
On the window's end, we hung up our lives, for our captors there required of a source. And our tormentors know. On the willows there, we hung up our lives, for our captives there required of a source. And our tormentors know. Sing us one of the songs of Zion. Sing us one of the songs of Zion. Sing us one of the songs.
I'm Gina Torres, and when I'm in Chicago, I listen to Mary Morton on WCPT 820 AM.
And we are back. You're listening to Living Out Loud. I'm Mary Morton. I'm here with Derek Clifton. And we're going to chat a little bit, as we do in this segment, What's the 411? Talk a little bit about the election results, right? It's hard to believe that it was earlier this week, and I voted easily a couple weeks earlier than that, so I forget that it was just this past week that we had an election. What do you think about how things went, and what were some of the races or topics that you were interested in?
Golly. Well, I think a lot of people were paying attention to, of course, Bring Chicago Home and what that vote really meant to people. And I am disappointed, admittedly, with the result. I know the AP called it within the last few days that the initiative did not pass. And it's really just overall, like, I just find it really horrific that we're not in a place yet where people are looking at anti-poverty policy solutions in a way that is contributive rather than extractive. And it boggles my mind that, especially as we are, you know, facing a lot of various issues with the migrant crisis in particular.
Right.
And folks often said, well, why aren't we helping the homeless here in the city? And then you have an opportunity to do so. And then all of a sudden you vote against it.
Exactly. Exactly. No, you know, a lot of work. Because I talked to some of the organizers that were working on this issue. This was certainly Maria Haddon in the 49th Ward, introduced this in council. And this is not the first time that she's brought this forward. I think she did this in the previous administration, and I think they tried, but it really had an opportunity to move beyond whatever, you know, work they had done on it the last time around. And I'm happy that it was raised and that people had to think about it. And I think it's going to have to come back. I mean, I think it wasn't such a vast difference, right? So that it wasn't in any way possible to try to chip away at that difference and hopefully get it passed.
Yeah, and it wasn't like a blowout loss either. I think that's another thing that's encouraging. I think what something like 46 or 47% of voters did say yes. And I know some folks who were watching this closely said that, you know, it could have been where there was some undervoting or people were just confused by seeing a lengthy worded ballot question.
Exactly.
And didn't know what to do, so they may have just voted no because it said something about taxes.
That's
or
right.
Or they just didn't select it because they were confused.
And that happens often with the judicial vacancies, right? It's and I, you know, I'll just say, years ago, I used to be one of those folks like, I don't know any of these people, but there would be one or two people I would know. I literally did all my homework this time, so I went in, I was ready, I voted in every single category, and that's going to become, I think, even more important. You know, this is the primary. We've got the general coming up. But before the general, of course, we're going to have the DNC. But before we get to the DNC, let's talk about the Cook County State's Attorney's Office.
Yes. And that margin is tightening by the day.
It is.
Yes. And one of the things, and this goes back to just something that really irritates me about a lot of campaigning is that you have to give people something to vote for. Mm-hmm. And by and large, a lot of the ads from both sides in this race, it got really negative.
It did.
It got really negative. And a lot of voters and some people I know, they complain, well, who and what do they stand for? And if you dig a little deeper, you could see the differences. But overall, I think if people have something they know they're voting for, whether or not it's a reform issue or something fundamental, then they may be motivated to get up and go and, you know, press the button, do what they have to do. But in this race, you know, it end up being framed as a, well, who's going to do what to succeed, you know, the current state's attorney, you name it. But overall, it was pretty disappointing.
It was disappointing. And we're going to have to wait, you know, a few additional days, apparently, for the mail-in ballots and to see how it's going to line up. I mean, no matter who gets in, we need someone in who's going to, I mean, ideally, continue to, yes, address what's happening with regard to crime. We need that happening, that there's no doubt about that. And also, I hope, continue to push along some of the reforms that were put into place under Kim Fox. The number of people that have been exonerated is unbelievable during, you know, the last several years. And these are folks who have been in prison.
Mm-hmm.
Wrongly accused for many, many years. People 20 and 30 years. It's just hard to believe that someone's been in prison that long and really did not belong there.
And that's one of the things that I think, you know, people may not realize what the current administration did. But I think, you know, I think they'll be in the long run pretty grateful for a lot of the work that was done to really change how the system is administered in the county. So, you know, one can only hope that whomever ends up being victorious in this race doesn't end up rolling back a lot of that progress.
Exactly. That's what I hope. So let's talk a little bit about voter turnout. It was lower than it's ever been, apparently, in any primary. And I'm wondering what you think might be the reason for that.
This was, and this is where, you know, a lot of times the top of the ticket ends up correlating with how the rest of the down ballot votes will go.
Exactly.
And
that's right.
A lot of people, a lot of Democrats in particular, sizable enough, are dissatisfied with the choices that they know they're going to have. We walked into this primary knowing that it was going to be another Biden versus Trump general election. So some people were like, well, that's done. I don't need to go vote.
Right.
What have you.
Right. Exactly.
And didn't see the criminal justice system on the ballot as something worth going out to vote for in terms of how that aligns with their values. But also there's the Gaza factor. According to In These Times, with 98% of precincts reporting at the time of their story, there was about 14% undervoting on the presidential line, which indicates, the, of course, some of the write-ins, which a lot of people, there was a lot of organizing and campaign to write in Gaza or to leave the ballot blank, to hopefully send a message to Washington about the current situation and how they're acting as it relates to what's happening with Israel and Palestine.
It absolutely was very evident that that was going to occur. People talked about, you know, that prior, that they were going to do write-in campaigns, and they in fact did them. And I totally understand why someone would do that. And at the same time, I want people to understand that if we do that in the general, we're going to be in a bad, bad place. It's going to be something that we just can't turn around. And I don't think people really understand when we say democracy is at stake. I'm not sure people really understand what that means. And this morning, this morning, the governor from Alabama, whose last name I think it's Ivy, has passed a piece of legislation that would outlaw any references to diversity, equity, and inclusion. Just, I mean, let that sink in for a moment. That's what they're spending their time on.
Yes, and also there's a lot of concern. I don't think there's enough concern about it. I think people really need to look into this. The 2025 initiative, I think that is particularly alarming about what Trump plans to do if he gets back in terms of how they're quickly going to flip a lot of people who are in the civil service, who are government workers, and replace them with people who are extreme loyalists,
right,
so that they can further circumvent free and fair elections and, of course, a lot of various other functions of our government. And that in particular should raise enough eyebrows to make people want to get out and vote.
Absolutely. I'm hoping so. And you know, this week and next week in particular, we're going to be focusing on that a little bit more. I want to also just mention before we go to break that all the music we're playing today is by the extraordinary Lucy Smith. He'll be joining us right after this break. And we opened with some of that music. We played a little from On the Willow, which is from Godspell, a little pre-Easter tune for you all, for those who celebrate. And of course, today is Palm Sunday. And the next piece we have coming up is a little bit from As I Am, which is from the summer show that actually you attended, Derek. And we're going to talk a little bit about how that, seeing that show and hearing Lucy really inspired this incredible article that you wrote. But this is As I Am, and we're going to hear a little bit of this coming up right now from Lucy Smith. You're listening to Living Out Loud, and we're back in a moment.
God made me as I am. God made me as I am. God takes me as I am. God takes me as I am. God takes me. God made me. I am. God made me. Yes. I am. So that's the melody. Religious, whoever you think made you. I've been doing a lot of self-affirmation of late just to counter some of the darkness. I like darkness, ballads, songs in minor keys and stuff, you know.
But it's easier to talk. Hi, everyone. everyone, it's Mary Morton with Living Out Loud. And here's a little bit about Morton Group, the sponsor of my show. Morton Group is a national consulting firm working with nonprofits, foundations, for-profits, and government entities. Our work helps organizations expand and deepen their impact by working on equity initiatives and executive placements, among other areas of focus. Reach out to us at info@mortongroup.com with any questions. And don't forget to listen in on Sundays at 1 p.m. on WCPT 820 a.m. And we are back. You're listening to Living Out Loud. And that was a little bit of music from the one, the only Lucy Smith, who is joining us live right now. Hello, Lucy Smith.
Hello, Mary. Hello, Derek.
Hello.
How are you today?
How are you guys? Happy. I'm good. Happy Palm Sunday.
Well, happy Palm Sunday to you as well. For those of us who celebrate, that's right. Everyone, Derek and I were talking about the last time we visited a church, and it's been a minute.
Well, yeah, I completely understand.
Well, here's the thing, and this is really related to what we're going to talk about, is, you know, being able to go to a church where you feel welcomed and affirmed, and you can also then hear some really wonderful gospel music. And I just have to say, those things were not lining up for us. We did a lot of searching along that vein, and it just didn't work out. And Derek, what about you in terms of when you hear gospel music?
I have to go online and do some digging or just rely on, you know, what, you know, I remember from hearing growing up in, you know, Baptist churches on the South Side. And you know, it really just saddens me in some cases that, you know, some LGBT folks, you know, of course, make the decision, and of course it's their own decision, to remain in congregations that may not be affirming, but they love the worship and music experience so much that they continue going because they want the word, they want the feeling, they want the experience. And I can't fault them for that, but I know it's just something I can't do anymore.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Lucy, and where are you hearing gospel music? Unless you're making it, of course, which you can do at any time. I understand you can hear gospel music.
I listen to gospel music almost every day, but
really?
No, it's not from. I mean, I was raised Catholic, but my mom really just. I mean, and you know, just like you guys, I was born and raised in Chicago, and Chicago is the home of gospel music, and so. We couldn't escape it. I mean, we even, you know, my mom would, our place was flush with gospel and blues and soul music. And so, you know, I just have to admit that it just touches me, differently. And, you know, in your, I'm not to jump to your article, Derek, but there's a term
that's fine.
That really, church hurt. Is real, you know,
church hurt.
And it's called church hurt.
Yes.
Yeah. And
mm-hmm.
Those two words. And so as you know, the older I get, to be honest with you, the more comfortable I think saying that I still identify as Catholic. For a while I said ex-Catholic because it was like, you know, how many middle fingers? I wish I had more middle fingers, how many I was tossing,
okay.
You know, to the Catholic mm-hmm. to the Catholic Church and just
right.
the stupid hypocrisy that reigns in organized religion, you know?
Exactly.
It's just ridiculous. But the older I get, you know, I know that I love ritual and I love old hymns and I love, you know, I had this wonderful job of, I was the music director at this church for over 8 years where I got to rearrange stuff and intertwine, you know, black gospel music with traditional hymns and all this other kind of stuff. And I'm not affiliated with any kind of church, but there's one preacher in particular who I really love. And I listened to her this morning. I watched her this morning, but she's in Atlanta.
Right, right.
So there you go.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, you do what you need to, right? And you make it work for you. You know, I want to just segue to the article because I want Derek to set some foundation for us. You wrote an article talk to us about the title of the article. And I know it was inspired by you attending something during the summer in the parks.
Sure. So the article is titled Gospel Music Would Be Nothing Without Black, Queer, and Trans Artists. And it's published at Them, which you can go to them.us. It's Condé Nast's LGBTQ plus magazine. And it was inspired by the shout out event that happened in the Chicago parks last summer, which of course was led by Lucy and her team. And, you know, I went there with my partner just to experience the music and walked away learning so much from the narration, from hearing the selections. And it really encouraged me to go in and really understand and unpack why it is that events like this matter to folks. And it just fits within a context and a current trend of reclamation of art and music genres that have been pioneered by Black folks and even Black LGBTQ plus folks, but that legacy has been often overlooked, erased, overshadowed. And it's not fair and it's hurtful. And something my partner and I walked away with, you know, asking, we were happy and uplifted by the event. At the same time, you were like, why is it that we didn't know this?
Right. Right.
And and that's what sat with us. So we wanted to learn more.
And so, Lucy, tell us, you know, briefly how you came to put this show together. And I know you have this extraordinary narrator, Cheryl Corley. We're going to be leaving
the
show.
Well, Cheryl's a narrator and historian.
Historian.
You know,
okay.
So she does the, I mean, you know, we're a wonderful team. You know, I lead the band. I pick the tunes and you know, might give her, you know, like links, but then Cheryl weaves it all together. She is my partner in art for a number of projects that we've done together. And so she wrote it, you know, she wrote the kind of the historical text that you're hearing and the relations to the civil rights movements and all these other kind of movements. And then, there's that, but the reason that we were able to do this is because the RFP from the request for proposals, I'm sorry, from the Night Out in the Parks program specifically had this category that was called Queering the Parks. They used that word. They used Queering the Parks. And I was like, what? You know?
Right.
So it was an opportunity to really, you know, to really delve in. And like I said, I'm a trained jazz singer, but I've been singing gospel music my whole life, you know, and this was an opportunity to take it to places that, you know, we haven't been before, and to tell the story. And the older I get, the more, I don't know, I don't have any S left. Does that make sense?
Say that again.
I'm trying to figure out a diplomatic way of saying.
Yes, because we are on radio.
That, I didn't say the word though.
No, that's fine. That's fine. But I wanted to make sure I knew what you were referring to. Okay. You said F. Is that right? You said F. Is that?
Yeah.
Okay, I understand.
Yeah,
we know what that word is. You don't have
right,
any F left.
Know.
Okay, yes. You don't give any F. Okay, yes.
Yeah, I mean, because you guys referred to it, but there's actually half of our country is working on, you know, eliminating DEI. It's over 22 states now.
Okay.
So,
that's,
yeah.
I did not realize it had increased to that number.
And it's not just about queer folks. It's like, we don't even want to hear about disabled people. We don't want to hear about people. I mean, you
that's
know,
right.
So, and I think people
anyone
don't
who's different
even know what DEI even really means. It means like making sure that your damn campus is accessible.
No.
Don't get me started.
No, please. No, this could be, many, many shows. It's infuriating.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize the number had grown to 22 because I still believe.
They're using the same, you know, those organizations that just crank out stuff and they pass it out to the different legislatures. So that's what's going on.
Okay. Well, I just knew that because of the work we do, I really am the optimist. I do believe that there's still more people who want to do good than not. Am I alone in that?
No.
No. I mean, okay. People want to know. People are hungry for information. This piece that you wrote, Derek, goes actually in some parts beyond our show, you know? And so I love it. I love it so much. So thank you.
No, thank you. And one other thing, you know, I think is important to add for context is, you know, for, you know, a lot of folks, what we talked about earlier, church hurt, is a reason why they may, you know, be inclined to not only hear and receive gospel, but also there are so many nameless faces, faceless Black LGBTQ folks who are choir directors, who are ministers of music.
Totally in the closet. That's
and
right.
who mm-hmm. aren't open and couldn't be open for so many decades. Mm-hmm. So instead, they may decide to leave the church and go make secular music, but still be rooted in that faith in a very substantive way. I think one of the artists who did that was mentioned in the piece is Sylvester. And Be Slain. There are many others to name, but you know, I think it's about the experience of being able to be in a church community as you are, or to feel as though you're at home in whatever faith tradition or kind of spirituality that you practice, and why it's important for folks to really tap into that history, not only because it connects us to ourself and our upbringing, our formative memories, but it connects us to each other and shapes us.
Absolutely. And I, you know, when you said something about singing in a choir, Lucy, I mean, all the things you just mentioned, Derek, are the things that I miss about singing in the choir that I grew up in. I sang in a choir for 10, 15 years in a Catholic church, but we were, you know, the progressive Catholic church, and we had a gospel choir, and we started singing, and we had instruments, and I miss that, and have not been able to find anything like that, certainly as an adult. I have to take that back. We did go to a church for a while, St. Martin's. It's just that it's so far away from us. It's literally, on the borderline between Oak Park and Austin, and you know, I live all the way north, so it was a little difficult. It's been a little difficult to get there. Yes, absolutely. So looking for that home, that church home, I think is something that many of us continue to do. What was the reaction? I'm curious. What kind of reaction did you get from the article, Derek?
It was overwhelmingly positive. I'd expected to receive some trolling and some nasty grams. but by and large, there was little of that. It was more so people feeling as though, you know, my editor, you know, said that, you know, they cried in some sections of, you know, just reflecting while editing this piece, because, you know, for so many folks, it's like that experience has been taken away from us to be able to be in a zone where we can tap into our spirituality and our faith beliefs. So it was positive, and I'm thankful for that, you know, and I think it's a testament to the phenomenal work that, again, Lucy, you and your team did.
Lucy, when will we be able to see this show again? Let's just talk about that so we can try to make it happen. Let's try to make that happen.
You know, it's a challenge for me to, I think, for artists to say that this, you know, that their work really rocks. But, you know, and for a little while, you know, it was difficult for me to even listen to, you know, go back and listen to my work. I think this show has legs. I think it's really important, and I would love to take this show to any place that would have it. So, and that means, I have gotten kind of mixed reviews from people who I really love and adore. Some people say, everybody needs to hear this, but they're probably going to shut down if you use the word queer.
Ah, interesting. You know? Interesting.
So they said, so it's like, you could probably take it to everywhere, and then they'll go, you know, afterwards, oh my goodness, they probably won't walk out because, you know, because they're going to be learning something. But, you know, there's a part of me that, you know, that my response to that, because I keep saying because I'm older and I'm happy to wake up every day, but I'm like, no way, dude. And, of course, I didn't use that. You know, I my language was probably a little bit more harsh. But,
yes. Yeah, we understand that.
But I don't know what's next. Okay. I would like to, you know, there's been, you know, suggestions to completely document it so that it can be shown on a, you know, a public platform or something like that.
Well, Lucy, we think that's the very least that should happen. And I want to just turn to Derek for a moment to see if there's anything you want to add in before we have to wrap with you.
No, I think, you know, going back, you know, as Lucy mentioned, you know, there's always that thing about what's next and what artists can do. And I think there's so many different ways that this project could, you know, take shape. So I really hope that it gets out into the world in so many new and refreshing ways.
And maybe we'll talk about some of those ways with you after the show, Lucy, because I think Derek has some ideas.
Mm-hmm. I'm all ears.
Well, thank you so much. We have been speaking with jazz singer extraordinaire Lucy Smith. We're going to continue playing her music throughout the rest of the show. And Lucy, thank you so much for joining us today on Living Out Loud.
Thanks to you both to you and Derek. Thank you so much.
Okay. You are listening to Living Out Loud, and we are back in a moment.
Joyful, joyful, we adore you, God of glory, Lord of love. Hearts unfold like flowers before you, opening to the sun above. Melt the clouds of guilt and sadness, drive the dark of doubt away. Giver of immortal gladness, fill us with the light of day. All your works with joy surround you, earth and heaven reflect your rays. Stars and angels sing around you, center of unbroken praise. Field and forest, vale and mountain, flowery meadow, flashing sea, chanting bird and flowing fountain, praising you eternally. God's own love is raining o'er us, joining people hand in hand. Ever singing, march we onward, victors in...
What's happening, people? This is Gina Yashue, comedian extraordinaire. And when I'm in Chicago, I like to hang out with my good friend, Mary Morton, on her fantastic show, Living Out Loud, on WCPT. So listen!
And we are back, and I just have to give a shout out to Gina Yashere, who is super funny, and is super funny on Monday nights on Bob Hart's Abishola on Channel 2. This is the last season for this show, and it's a really big deal that she is both the showrunner and the co-creator, you know, Nigerian queer person who's been doing this incredible job for the last 5 years. So congratulations to her. So that was Joyful Joyful from Autumn in Augusta, and we just had a lovely chat with Lucy Smith. And I'm going to really make it my business to just put on some gospel music as a result of today's show, Derek.
I will likely be in the car listening to Sarah Jordan Powell. That song takes me to a place, especially when she hits that note on When Jesus Comes. Song is phenomenal.
Wonderful. Incredible. Well, what's on tap, you know, in your lane, if you will, coming up for the summer, the spring? What's coming down the pike for you?
So, of course, there is no shortage of no shortage of things to cover right now.
Oh, yes. Particularly here.
Yes.
That's right.
But, you know, I'll be keeping my thumb on the pulse of what's happening socially and culturally as it relates to the election. And cultural commentary tends to be my main lane these days. And, you know, I tend to prefer writing for publications that are for and by multicultural audiences, because in so many ways we are the culture. We shape the culture.
Oh boy, do we.
We are the originators.
That's right.
And I think it's important that we center us in that coverage so that others can learn, and even so we can learn from each other. So, you know, for me, and I think we're in a really interesting time in terms of the level of trust in news. You know, there's information out there around people relying more on what they see on social media versus what they see in local news. And going into this election season, that for me is alarming. But in so many ways, a lot of publications like I write for them have a really strong Instagram presence and others. So I think there are ways to still get information out there. It's just a matter of being really innovative and figuring out which approaches are going to really resonate with people so that they can feel in so many ways that there are solutions to what we are seeing out here, and not just feeling left dejected and disheartened or downtrodden by what they're hearing or reading about what's happening.
And where do you get your news from? Is it a combination of sources, or is there one place that you like, if I don't check anything, I'm checking this in the morning?
Variety of sources. You know, I tend to avoid the cable shows. I watch them sometimes. My partner is obsessed with them. Other than that, you know, PBS NewsHour, Democracy Now. I read for cultural coverage, Essence. I read them. You know, not only I write there, I read a lot of what my colleagues write. So, you know, and of course, locally, Block Club Chicago does great work. The Tribe does great work. Mm-hmm. So, you know, really finding those avenues. And I think local news is just so important these days, and it's undervalued and underappreciated.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think it's very interesting that you included Essence, because Essence has changed. There was a time when at least I wouldn't have said Essence. You know, when I was sort of coming into my activism, if you will, I read Essence, I read Ms. Magazine, I thought I had it down. And Essence at that time, probably in the, you know, late 80s, 90s, was not as progressive, I'm going to use the term, as I would have liked. And I would say that has changed. And you know, if you hadn't thought it changed before, certainly when they had the cover of Niecy Nash and Jessica Betts on it,
yes,
that told you something, I would say. Yeah.
Yeah, they're finding various ways to celebrate the various different facets of blackness and black womanhood and black femmes in a way that I think is just really phenomenal. And and I also appreciate that they recently had Beyonce on the cover, which is a hard cover to get, but to really talk about issues like hair care, and also, you know, going back to music, this project that Beyonce is doing, which comes out Friday, that's going to, in so many ways, still drive the conversation about reclaiming country and Western culture.
Absolutely.
As it relates to black people. And
absolutely,
again, how we pioneered or, you know, originated a lot of that.
That's right. And we're going to talk about that next week. Next week, I have joining me the new CEO of Center on Halsted, and she just happens to be from Dallas, Texas.
Oh.
Jolie Robinson. Yeah, so we're definitely going to be talking about Beyonce next week for sure. But the last thing I want to ask you is about the DNC, the Democratic National Convention, which will be here in August, and things are really starting to heat up, and people are talking about it more. And, of course, we had an opportunity to vote for delegates in this last election this past week. What do you think you'll be doing around the DNC, if anything?
I will be watching it closely, and, you know, as needed, you know, right and weigh in. I think it'll be interesting to see a lot of the nation's, you know, observers, political and otherwise, really pay close attention to Chicago, the issues in the city, and what the party's platform is. But also, you know, these conventions are also sites of activism in so many ways. In the past, that's taken shape with, you know, LGBTQ+ folks. I know in this particular DNC, there may be activism around what's happening in Gaza.
Absolutely.
You name it. So it'll be very, very captivating to pay attention to.
For sure. And in fact, I just heard something this past week on BEZ where there may be a suit that's filed from. It was described as a social justice organization. It didn't say the name. And this organization is really trying to push back against the fact that the organizers from the convention have said, oh, sure, you can protest. We just want you to do it 3 miles away from United Center. And, of course, that's not what they had in mind. So it'll be interesting to see how that turns out. But, yeah, the entire city will be on, you know, mm-hmm. for this. The world will be watching, seriously. And I know things are, you know, just really starting to heat up. And so I'm looking forward to that. I assume I'll be there at some point. One of the groups that'll be on next week as well is a group that I've been working with called Q-Force. And this is a group of LGBTQ folks, queer folks, Q-Force, who are really organizing here in Chicago to make sure we can support on-the-ground efforts in Michigan and in Wisconsin. Because, as you know, no one has ever won a presidency and not won those two states. So we want to make sure we are doing what we can to support local communities and getting out the vote. And so we're going to have a kickoff on April 13th. It's going to be at Sidetrack. And then we're going to have another kickoff on May 4th at 2 p.m. You can go to Q-Force on Instagram, on Facebook, and you can sign up. We'd love to know how many people are coming. But this is going to be really the official kickoff to get out the vote, because we really have to do that. If you have been complacent before and thought, it doesn't matter, it matters. It matters. It matters. This is one of those times when we say please vote because really your life depends on it. We mean it.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is it. So, Derek, thank you so much for being with me today.
Thank you for having me here, Mary. I appreciate it.
It's been wonderful. And we're going to link to your story again tomorrow when we post the show in a couple of places. And hopefully people will check it out. We're going to end today with a little bit more from Lucy's show, Queering in the Park. This is a piece titled How I Got Over, and it opens with narration from Cheryl Corley, who done an incredible job putting this together for this show. So we're gonna leave you with that, and we're gonna see you next week on Living Out Loud.
And arranger Clara Mae Ward, and the famous Ward Singers helped make it so. Born in 1924, Ward was 7 when she and her mother and her 9-year-old sister started performing in Philadelphia. Ward was touring nationally by the early 40s and performing constantly, whether it was gospel or secular music, in churches and recording studios, in Carnegie Hall, and even Las Vegas nightclubs. She died at the age of 48 in 1973. In a biography, her sister Willa wrote that Clara Ward was driven, often by her evangelist stage mom manager, and found safety in several sexual relationships with women. What was more well known was Clara Ward's style, her shiny gowns, her big hair, a dynamic alto voice, and very energetic piano playing. She was a gifted musician and she had a longtime personal and professional relationship with Detroit's Reverend C.L. Franklin, and she was a musical advisor and mentor to his daughter, Aretha Franklin. And Franklin would go on to perform Clara Ward's How I Got Over. It is one of the most famous songs in the repertoire of black gospel music. Gospel legend Mahalia Jackson also performed it during the 1963 March on Washington. And the Library of Congress also selected to preserve it in the National Recording Registry. How I Got Over, Clara Ward.